you know, my dad said, you're going to travel, you're going to do your thing, live your life, go be free. There will be a day, if I call you on that day and say, you need to come home, this is the time you have to come home and say goodbye. He's like, I will call you and I will tell you that and I will be honest.
My mom has stage 4 cancer in her bones and in her breast. My dad's disease was 15 years, he died of ALS. I made a podcast about death, seemed like the thing to do. And if you're sad by all of this, well, you're gonna die too.
Hello, happy week all or sad week y'all. It's Chelsea London Lloyd, the host of Dying of Laughter. Welcome to the saddest, happiest, sad bads. It's the sad bads. It's the saddest, baddest, happiest little grief time over here. And I just hope everyone is taking a moment this summer to appreciate how far they've come. There's so much talk of, oh my goodness, it's already halfway through the end of the year. No, no, no. It's only halfway. You've made it. You've done it. You're here. You're standing on your 2 feet. You're putting one foot in front of the other. And I hope you can just take a brief moment today, right after this episode, to just say 3 things out loud that you have done this year that you are super proud of. Don't lie to me. You got 3. It's not about what you're doing tomorrow. It's what you have done so far. Sure, you can futurize, but it's way too easy to get caught up in what needs to be done as opposed to what we have done. So that's my little suggestion moment for the day. Now, today's episode, I am psyched to have Elisa Fornaray here. Oh my goodness, she is the founder of Caregiving 2021. It's a 2-month event. It's happening right now. It's a virtual event built for people grieving the loss of a caregiver, be that a mother, father, guardian, or otherwise. Last year, she did a Motherless Mother's Day, and now she's expanding it this year. It's 2 months long. It's fantastic. Immediately, please, everyone head to ElisaFornaray.com. That's Elisa, A-L-I-C-A, Fornaray, Fornaret.com/caregiving-2021. Or you can just Google these days and you'll find it. A Google Caregiving 2021, you'll get to the site. There are online programs and virtual happenings almost every day. I mean, it's fantastic. Week 1 was Mother's Day and community themed. Week 2 was grief and the power of rest, followed by grief and identity, grief and movement, grief and relationships, grief and mental health, and finally Father's Day and storytelling. And if you're not able to attend live, all of these virtual offerings are available after the fact. So there's wonderful things going on there. And I can't even believe it. How cool that we have the founder here. Elisa is an educator and consultant originally from Riverside, California. She runs a business in the end-of-life space, and its mission is to facilitate spaces for people to navigate their grief. Her writing and work has been featured in the LA Times, New York Times, GQ, HuffPost, and more. For fun, she likes to make epic plant-based cheese boards. Holla! And it was just really, really incredible to talk to her. And I'm going to do an email blast blog post of her written responses. So if you like what you hear here, look out for that email and you can ping me dyingoflaughterpodcast@gmail.com to sign up for that if you don't already receive it. Today, we are discussing the loss of her mother to a variety of complications, deaths that can be more complicated, not necessarily pinpointed to one specific illness, I think are really important to discuss and address. And Elisa will be doing just that. We also address what it's like to have lost someone when you are adopted. We also address what it's like to have lost your mother when you are adopted, which is an extremely important topic to cover. And thank you, Elisa, for opening up so eloquently about all of these things. Thanks for sticking around. I appreciate you being here. I know there's a lot of podcasts to choose from. So Elisa, I will turn it over to her in just a second and I'll talk to you guys next week. Have a good one. Bye. Elisa, I am so impressed by the incredible work that you're doing with Caregiving 2021 and showing up online in grief spaces. I can't wait to jump into that as well as your personal grief journey today. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I want to talk about your personal story first, and then we'll jump into your incredible business. Something that I ask everyone on this show is about your goldfish moment. And your goldfish moment is the first time you thought about or conceptualized death in some way. For some people, it was their goldfish. Does a moment come to mind in your childhood? Goldfish moment, did your goldfish die? Goldfish moment, did it make you cry?
We had a lot of pets growing up, like a lot of pets. My mom was kind of one of those people where it's like, you're at the grocery store and you see a box of puppies and she's like, let's take them all home. Inevitably, that also meant that I had a lot of pets die. So I imagine we had a tortoise that got run over by a car. And I imagine that that's probably like one of the first times that I really thought about it, where I was like, oh, that thing is fully gone. That's probably the earliest memory that I would have.
What was your tortoise's name?
I don't even remember. We had two and it like ran away. It got out and yeah, it got hit by a car in front of our house. And I don't remember its name, but I remember very vividly just the experience of that. Great way to start also. Oh my gosh, I feel like I'm getting real dark here.
Transporting back into time. Hey, darkness and humor, that's what we do. And hey, RIP to your tortoise who was hit by a car. Poor guy. I mean, I love that. I'm obsessed that you don't know his name. Like, you're just like, he was my pet. Don't know. There was a moment. We'll never know. But shout out to him. We're honoring your mother here today. Thank you so much for being willing to share some of your story. I'm wondering if you could open up a little bit about your upbringing and the timeline. So if you could share with listeners who you grew up with, where you grew up, and walk us through childhood through losing her in 2016.
Yeah, thank you. So I grew up in Riverside, California. It's Southern California, about an hour east of Los Angeles. I was adopted in 1989 by my parents. They adopted me from birth. And about 19 months later, they also adopted my sister. So I grew up with my mom, my dad, and my sister in our home in Southern California. Like I said, my mom was like an animal person, a creative person. So she was a nurse and my dad is a doctor. But when I was born and when they adopted me, she stopped nursing and just raised me and she raised me and my sister. So we grew up in a very like creative, loving, very special household where my mom was super incredibly supportive of any wild, weird things that I wanted to do. And so she was sick for a lot of my life, had a lot of different kinds of complications. She was in the hospital, you know, shortly after my sister was born. And just, it was something very normal to be dealing with my mom being ill and in and out of the hospital. And then in 2016, my sister got married, and the night of her wedding, my mom fell and ended up in the hospital. So she left the wedding in an ambulance and was overnight in the hospital, and she got out the next day. And then after that, she had some complications, ended up back in the ICU, and died about a week after she went back into the ICU. She ended up going on a ventilator, was having all different kinds of problems, and got to the point where her body was there, but everything else about her was gone. And so she died in the ICU in Riverside in October 2016.
Thank you for sharing that. And that, of course, sounds quite difficult. And I do relate to the experience of having a parent in and out of hospitals and being on a ventilator. So I'm very sorry for what you're going through. And I'm impressed by, of course, the wonderful things you're doing to help other people in similar situations to you. So
thank you
for sharing that. Growing up, what was it like seeing her in and out of hospitals? And what was the family unit like? Did you talk to your dad or your sister about it? Or was it something that you talked to a friend about? Stuffed animals, no one. I know a lot of people didn't have these resources, which is why it's so cool you're making them today.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I always say, so I traveled a lot after I got out of high school. I like left town. I went to 7 different colleges. I like lived all over the world, traveled a lot.
Amazing.
And my dad, like with my mom being sick so often, you know, my dad said, you're going to travel, you're going to do your thing, live your life, go be free. There will be a day if I call you on that day and say, you need to come home, this is the time you have to come home and say goodbye. He's like, I will call you and I will tell you that. And I will be honest. Otherwise, like, do your thing. You know, I was in Mexico. I was living in Mexico when my mom got really sick once. And I was like, do I need to come home? Do I need to come home? And he's like, honestly, like, we've seen so much of this. It's going to be okay. You can choose to. But when he called me in 2016, he was like, it's the time. This is the call. Like, let's go get on a plane. And I was actually living in Scotland. So I think it was like a thing that we were aware of and talked about, the fact that it could be that bad or it could be that threatening one day. But before, I think it was just so frequent that it was like, I don't know what it's been like for you, but it's kind of one of those things where I think, especially as a kid, you kind of get into a place where you're like, you need to protect yourself from expecting that every time someone goes into a hospital, they're going to die. So it's kind of like, all right, we're going to assess the situation every time and we'll go from there.
Yes, I can relate to that. And I had moments when I had to be pulled from school to say goodbye to my dad for unique surgeries that often were not survivable. And then several years later, he was still around, which was great, but it did become confusing as to when X, Y, or Z would occur. Are you open to sharing a little bit more about what these complications looked like or what they knew about her illness? I always like to share so people can relate if they had a similar experience. And if not, we can, of course, go on to the next question.
Yeah, I mean, my mom, she was having like breathing problems, blood problems, all kinds of problems. And she ended up on the ventilator and got to a point where she just was not going to survive without it due to some sort of like lung related complications. So yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And I'm, you know, it's wonderful. It's not the right word. It's empowering when I find someone, you know, who listens to the podcast and they're like, my mom, you know, as someone whose mom has breast cancer, it's like quote unquote common. And there's all these other kinds of complications and other things that people really appreciate when they're like, hey, my parent had this and it didn't have a name or it didn't have this trajectory. So thank you again. And I'm sure we'll get a response like that. So thank you.
Yeah.
You lost your mom in 2016. Can you tell us what it was like those first few years? I know those are certainly the most challenging. And was there someone in your life that you were able to open up to?
The first few years were wild. Like I said, so my mom was in the hospital the night of the wedding, got out. And like the day after, I think it was the day after, my husband and my now husband, my partner at the time, we got on a plane and flew to Scotland. And so I was like planning a move, going overseas from California, like fully just piecing out to go live my life and be with my partner in the UK. And getting that call to come back like 5 days later was so bizarre. And I think that sort of like just began this period of like, where do I need to be for myself? And where do I need to be for my dad, like physically in the world? And so the first couple months specifically, like I came back for the funeral, organized the funeral with my family and stayed with my dad. I like went through a bunch of stuff in the house, drank a lot of whiskey and watched a lot of Gilmore Girls and just like cried and hung out with my dad. And it got to a point where, you know, what was best for me was to go at a certain point and just pick up where I had left off. And my husband was really the person who I leaned on. And it's wild. I was just messaging his mom about this the other day. He's from Australia. And when I got back to Scotland, his mom actually came to visit and it was the first time I'd ever met her. And it was like a month and a half after my mom had died. So it was this wild experience of like meeting someone who was like potentially going to be a mother figure in my life and also being in a new place and also like never having met her. And I have to say, like, to your question about who I leaned on in those moments and in that trip, she ended up being someone that I spent alone time with. And I found those interactions quite comforting and really special. And so there was a little mix of her being that person for me for a little while and having those conversations with me early on. And then really, like, over the couple of years, you know, we left Scotland, we went to Australia for a little bit, we moved to Canada, and it's been my husband and it's been my friends and, like, therapists and other people in the grief and death industry who are willing to have those conversations that nobody else is ever willing to. But he's been, like, an incredible support for me showing up as I would say, like, a rock, but that sounds really, like, aggressive. It's sort of like a wall to lean on, to just, like, prop myself up against in the really the hardest moments.
Beautiful. And I wanted to ask, where are you living now? You're in Canada now, is that correct?
No, we just left Canada. I'm back in Riverside. So we bought a house last year in my hometown.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a trip being back in my hometown, being close to my dad. We're like a 15-minute drive from the house that I grew up in. It's pretty, especially this time of year around Mother's Day. Like, it's just so weird being back for the first time in like 15 years and my mom's not here. So it's a big transition, but yeah.
Absolutely. I feel like the best things in life have these not darker sides, but these challenging sides. And I think loss of identity, loss of self, loss of job, loss of the city you live in. Like, there's all these other kinds of grief that are certainly nothing as quote unquote difficult as the loss of a physical person, in my opinion. And yet there's all these interesting books coming about when you get married, the loss of who you were, when you move, the loss of who you are, changing jobs. And I find all of those transitions really interesting.
Yeah. I think, you know, if this year has taught us anything, it has taught us we are grieving things that have absolutely nothing to do with death in so many different parts of our life. And it's very real and compounding. So yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. What advice might you have for other people who lost their mother in a similar way to you? Or what advice would you have for people who were adopted specifically in navigating their own grief?
Two big questions that feel, I think, quite separate to me.
Sure.
So the first question, like, take your time. I was talking to a friend about this last night. She was like, I don't know how to articulate it. I don't know how to find the words. I don't know how to go talk to et cetera, et cetera, et cetera about this. And I'm like, you don't need to know. Like, you've never been in this situation before. Why would you have the words? You've never been in this situation before. Do not rush yourself to figure out how to navigate it. And I think that's something that I, you know, have to sort of relearn and reteach myself every year, particularly at this time of year where I'm like, I don't know what I need. I don't know what I want to do. What's going on? And it's like, because I've never had this anniversary, you know, of like Mother's Day or around the anniversary of her death, particularly, like, I've never experienced this before. I need to give myself some grace to figure out what it is that I'm feeling. And that takes time. It takes energy. And so giving yourself, if you have the space to do that, don't feel like you have to know what to do or how to navigate something. And I think in terms of being adopted, that's something that I am figuring out. I have a frustrating sort of relationship with the concept of being adopted. Like, my parents are my parents. They're not my adoptive parents versus my bio parent. Like, they are my parents. And I think that after my mom died, I was like, everything about mothering, motherhood, mothers, et cetera, feels extra hard. And it's because I've recognized from, like, talking to therapists and stuff, like, and my grief counselor who I had right, you know, shortly after we moved to Vancouver, like, I have lost multiple mothers and I have lost them both in ways that were fully out of my control. And in the first case, it was an instance of rejection. And I think to give advice when I'm still like, oh my gosh, this just feels so hard and weird and new, would be probably not smart of me. I think the thing that I would like encourage or invite people to do is like talk to people about how complicated it feels to be adopted. Because I think the older I'm getting, you know, I used to be like, I'm adopted. That's cool. Like, I'll like put it as my like fun fact. I put it for, I'm like, whatever. Like it's a thing that's a part of me, but it's also a very real piece of my identity that I think informs how I like navigate relationships, what it's going to be like for me to be a mom when we have kids, like, et cetera. So yeah, talking to people about it helps. Talking to people who are like, I'm also adopted and I feel weird about it. And I'm like, good, thank you. Validation. That's all I can ask for right now. I don't need to figure it all out.
I feel weird about it. Good. Thank you. Yes. I love when people, you know, that's my favorite thing, when people can be honest about their weird feelings, or like you said, when someone's like, I don't know how to talk about this. I think that's the first step, right? Acknowledging when we don't know and asking questions about other people's experiences, even when it may not be our own. So thank you so much for sharing a little bit more about your adopted experience. And I think it will be extremely helpful for people who are feeling similarly. So I really appreciate it. I have so many more things I want to ask you. I think I'm going to transition and talk about your business. Before I do that, is there something else about your mother or your grief experience that you wanted to share?
Her name was Deborah. I don't think we've said it yet. So I think just to share her name, her name was Deborah. I'm like looking at a picture of her right now. I'm like, you deserve that today for me to speak your name here. So yeah. Yeah, yes. I think that's it.
Normally do ask, and I love that you brought it up first. So thank you for sharing her name. And I love that there's a picture of Deborah right there beside you. So Alisa, you have started this incredible virtual experience that's benefiting so many people. Can you, in your own words, describe Caregiving 2021? And I know it started as a motherless Mother's Day, and now it's just taken on the life of its own in these incredible virtual spaces. I would love to give you the floor and share more about what you're doing, because it's just mind blowing. I'm so excited for the audience to hear about it.
Yeah, thank you. So in 2019, I hosted my first version of Motherless Mother's Day, and it was like, I put it out into the world in Vancouver and was like, I'm going to build this experience for people who want to spend Mother's Day and need, in a lot of cases, to spend Mother's Day, A, avoiding the internet, avoiding social, avoiding people, avoiding phone calls, avoiding the world, and all of the like sandwich boards telling you to bring your mom in for brunch, and B, who want to allow someone to take care of them, and who want a space on that particularly hard weekend and day to have someone like show them some love when it's such a stressful, crappy weekend. So I hosted an in-person event in 2019. We did it all. We ate, we drank, we started the day off with doing yoga while also getting massaged with this company called Feelosophy in Canada. And so you like do yoga, you listen to banging music, and then people just walk around from the company and like give you a massage while you're doing it. And it's the most amazing thing I've ever done. It's amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And so I was like, okay, let's take care of our physical bodies, right? Relieve stress, relieve tension, find space to relax. So we did that. This was really just like sweet. I had someone come in and bring in all the equipment for everyone to mix and make their own candles. And then we would like add in scents that we remembered from like our mom's perfume and named them after our moms and like had this whole theme going on. That was really beautiful. Then we journaled through some like guided journaling and just had conversations and hung out. And so that was the first year, really intimate, really special. Fast forward to 2020, COVID. So I moved it online, and we was supposed to be like a couple of events on Mother's Day, and I am too ambitious. And it turned into 33 events in 72 hours. And it got out of control and was like such a special weekend. It was absolutely beautiful. So we did everything from last year. We did cooking sessions. We did dance sessions, like voguing classes, like a pony sweat class with this organization in LA. We did panels. We did author talks with people who've written books about their moms who've died. We did it all. And then this year, you know, I recognize, especially after the last year that we've had, people are not only grieving their moms, they're not only grieving the death of their dads, they're like, we are grieving the loss of people who have taken care of us in so many different capacities. And not everyone has a relationship with their mom. Not everybody grieves their mom at Mother's Day, whether or not they're dead. And so I expanded this year and shifted the name and the concept of the event to Caregiving 2021. I've invited in anyone to join this event for 7 weeks, which also was like too ambitious. But it's 7 weeks, and I've invited in anyone who has lost a caregiver in any capacity, whether that's a parent, a grandparent who took care of you, a mentor that took care of you, et cetera. And so I've, you know, drawn out this event as well, because Mother's Day is hard, Father's Day is hard, but Tuesdays are hard. Like, all the stuff in this season is hard, and it's a reminder of our loss. So yeah, similar format, like it's all digital again, of course. Hopefully next year it'll be in person in Los Angeles, where I'm setting up a lot of the work that I'm doing. But this year we're digital and we are doing the most. So I'm creating content for people to use offline. We're doing live sessions. I have people recording on-demand sessions, and it just feels really, really special. So yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it absolutely is. And congratulations on getting to the place where you have 7 weeks of events. That is a huge, huge accomplishment for any company or project. Of course, there's many things happening and we can't share them all, but are there a few events that are coming up that you wanted to highlight at this time? Specifically around Father's Day, I would be curious, as someone who lost their dad, and that is a tentpole. And like you said, there's a lot of other classes and opportunities for other kinds of losses. So would love to hear of those as well.
Yeah. So one of the good things about this year is that anyone who, like, regardless of when this comes out and people access it, like this episode, I've built it so that all of the replays for anything for the 7 weeks will be available. So if somebody buys their ticket literally on the last day, they will have replays and all of the content available. So one of the things, you know, I'd love to highlight from Mother's Day, for people who've lost their moms but didn't hear about this in time, I had some really powerful conversations about grief and losing moms and queerness. I had conversations about grief and losing moms and race and boundaries. We talked about building community and how to access community based on your identity that weekend. So I would love to just like highlight some of those sessions, because the mother loss stuff was unbelievably powerful this year. And I think, you know, even I was there and I'm going to listen to it all the time just to like find some peace again. And then actually, tomorrow in real time, I have an event coming up that people will be able to access on demand, and it's all about rest. So the second week of caregiving is focused on rest, because we need more rest. I don't rest enough. Nobody rests enough. And rest is so important and powerful when we're grieving. So tomorrow night, and people will be able to rewatch this, we are hosting an event where we're just going to spend an hour and a half with the Rested Revolution resting. We're going to lay down. We're going to surround ourselves by all kinds of comforting things. We're going to journal. We're going to do constructive resting, which will be guided. And then we're just going to have a chat about the significance of rest. And then in the next couple of weeks, got a lot planned. We'll be doing panels and discussions about relationships and how to discuss your grief with a partner or with someone else in your life. So I'll be having conversations like with couples and with families live, which I'm really excited about. And then Father's Day, that day will have quite a bit sort of slotted in on the Sunday, June 20th. But we're going to be doing panels. We're going to be doing sort of communal eating together. So sessions, I don't know if you're familiar with like the dinner party, but I've worked with them in the past, and like that kind of let's get together and have a meal where we can just like be with people who've had like similar losses. So yeah, it's a lot going on, but all the lineup and stuff will be on my site and everyone can access it there.
Wonderful. Okay. I would love to link some of those replays in the show notes, as well as shouting out a future event. I'm going to just be able to get some of that out. And then thanks for shouting out the Motherless Mother's Day events that you were talking about around queerness and identity. That's really important. So thank you for showing up for 7 weeks in every possible space and with couples and with families and with everything. That is epic, to say the least. I love on your website you mentioned there's no shame in burning out, but there's a responsibility to care for ourselves and others as best we can. I wonder how you care for yourself while caring for so many other people.
Yeah, great question. My husband actually holds a lot of the responsibility for, like, I think naturally the other day I'm going through a transition right now, just settling back in California, running my business, doing this event, doing just the most. I have a lot of stuff like kicking off in the next couple of months. And I find myself in positions of being overworked, of, you know, coming down from grief and not giving myself enough time for it after things, especially like Mother's Day. And, you know, one of the ways I care for myself is allowing the people in my life to check me and allowing the people in my life to pick me up off the couch and like push me down the hallway into bed and say, and when they do that, I do my best to just listen and recognize that sometimes I don't always care for myself well enough. And it's something that I can be ashamed of. It's something I can be embarrassed about. It could be something that I feel frustrated by. And at the same time, most of those feelings aren't productive. And what I need to do is just go the fuck to sleep. So I lean on people. And the other thing is too, like, I have little things that I do, and I have discovered the power of micro breaks. And, you know, someone told me in a session once, they were like, you don't have to have 4 hours in the middle of the day to take a nap. And, you know, like resting, caring for yourself, sleeping, like it, we just don't always have that time or the capacity or the ability to like shut our bodies down to that point in the middle of the day. Where can you find those other opportunities to take the mini breaks? So I like very much acknowledge myself and appreciate when I just look out my window and look at the squirrels in this tree. And when I get up from my desk and like, I haven't had water all day, I'm going to just go drink a cup of water. I'm going to stand at the sink and I'm going to drink it. And like, I need to applaud myself for that. I need to appreciate that. So I care for myself by doing the little things too, so that I don't have to feel bad when I can't do the huge things. And I drink plant-based milkshakes and I don't care if they aren't good for me. They feel good. So that is like the thing that I've been doing now that I'm home. There's a place literally like around the corner and I will just go drink a milkshake on the days when I need it.
Obsessed. I love shake smoothies so much. What's your favorite go-to at this place? What's in there? I want to hear about it.
Yeah. So it's strawberry and they put like this strawberry goop on the bottom and then they make the milkshake and they put little rainbow sprinkles on top. It's this place called Monty's and they opened, they're from LA, but they moved out to Riverside. And it is, and it's so thick. If you love milk, it's like one of those ones where they serve it with a straw, but also a spoon, because you basically just have to eat it with a spoon. And I did it on Mother's Day, I think. And I did it the day before Mother's Day. And I will probably do it this weekend. Like I'm just, it's a comfort for me.
That sounds, you know, and I love what you're saying about micro breaks too. Like, yeah, it feels like there's pressure. If you don't have this big gap, then you can't do anything. I mean, I've become a fan of like 20-minute walks. And I used to be like, I mean, that's nothing. Like, what's the point? And sometimes even like I'll have a Zoom, let's say it's 10. I'm like, I have a Zoom at 10:30. I'm already I'm just going to walk in the clothes I'm in and just walk around the block for 20 minutes. Like, why not? Why not? Or else I'll be on what? Scrolling and checking emails and just, yeah. So I try and do that. That shake place sounds amazing. Monty's. Okay. Love that so much. Love a milkshake moment. You know, you deserve. I'm glad you're doing that. I make shakes all the time, but somehow whenever I go to a place and buy one, why is it always better? Why is it always better when you buy it? It's not fair.
I don't know. Yeah. It's pretty real. Cause yeah, I'm like, I could make a smoothie at home. That is not a milkshake from a restaurant that is doing something to it that is making it taste 20 times better.
Yes, 100%. All right, I'll ask just a few more questions, a few wrap-up questions. Since you are a successful entrepreneur and there's a lot of entrepreneurs and self-starters listening, do you have a couple tips for people who are trying to get the word out about their own missions? I'm so impressed. You have your email newsletter, your website, Instagram, virtual events. I know that's a whole other podcast to talk about how to get that going, but are there a few takeaways on getting started that come to mind?
Thank you. I feel really touched to hear the words successful entrepreneur attached to my work. Like, that's really lovely. So thank you.
Of course.
Boundaries. I am, over the last couple of years, learning how to, you know, have started my business with none. And I'm like, I'll do anything. I'll work with anyone. Yes, I'll answer every email all the time, particularly in this space. A couple of years ago, I would say probably like a year and a half ago, someone said to me, you are at a point now where you won't answer every email 5 minutes after you get it. And you need to be okay with that. And you need to accept that, because that boundary for you means that you're taking care of yourself. And what it means is that you are in a place where you need to respect that this work in particular in the end of life field could be 24/7, and you can't give that to everyone. So I think boundaries and like being okay with not having them, but when you feel like you need to have one, or you're learning, oh, this is like, this doesn't feel as good as it used to, or this doesn't feel as like impactful as it used to, put up the boundaries, construct them around you. And I think the other thing, talk about your work to people. I had a conversation with a friend yesterday. I moderated a panel with Ibram X. Kendi yesterday, and it was like biggest conversation that I've had in a very long time. Huge privilege to be doing that work. And I felt unworthy of doing it for some reason, and didn't promote it in the way that I could have promoted it and should have promoted it. And like the company that I work for, they were on it. So it was amazing. And there were thousands of people, but like, I feared that I was not in a place in my business, not in a place in my career, not in a place in my ability to host this conversation, that I should be like yelling about it on the internet for some reason. But then the minute I did, I woke up yesterday morning and I was like, I have to tell people, this is really exciting. I just got a flood of love and people being like, girl, I didn't know about this. Why didn't you tell me about this? I'm so excited about this. This is amazing. And I think that's something that I've learned along the way, is like, there's just such amazing value in, if you're going to invest your time and energy into something and you have people in your life who are going to follow it, support it, appreciate you, and be there, like take advantage of that. Talk about it, be open about it, promote the crap out of it, because those people will follow you hopefully for the rest of your life and career, and they want to be advocates for you. And you sort of, for me, like I need to let those people be my advocate, be my amplifier, and support me in this work, because if I don't talk about it, like, what is the point? You know, if I don't toot my own horn, what is the point?
Thank you for sharing that, and about boundaries and all the things. And I like that you ended up sharing about that event. I can relate. And sometimes there's so many events and things you're like, I can't share them all. But then when you do, even on like your story or in a small way, like, people are like, oh, cool. And you're like, oh, you think it's cool? They're like, yeah, because it's really cool. And you're like, oh yeah, it's cool. Why did I wait till the day of to share this? Is there one thing in particular that you feel like has been most exciting or effective in growing your business? Like, some people it's their newsletter, some people it's their events. I know you do a lot of things. Some people it's their social presence. Like, do you have a favorite avenue of sharing about your business?
I have recognized, I think especially recently, I do a lot of work around grief in the workplace and how people handle grief at work, how managers, leaders, companies, organizations, et cetera, are seriously ill-equipped to handle a lot of the grief that people, and particularly people of color, bring into work every day. And in doing that work, I'm learning, you know, where the balance and value is of having conversations and doing this work and facilitating for small, intimate groups of people who are super, super, super bought in and like ready to do the work versus having it on like some giant sort of platform and opportunity where, you know, 95% of the people that are there are kind of like, that was cool. Never going to do any, never going to action on what she was talking about. So like, in terms of where I love promoting the work, it's to people who like voluntarily are ready to listen and excited to do the work with me.
I love that. And thank you. I saw on your website too, the work you're doing, you said with HR and companies to promote opportunities for bereavement in the workspaces. That must be really interesting. Is there one story that comes to mind that you would like to share around that? Or what has that looked like for you in showing up for companies? I think that's just incredible.
Yeah, I'll give an example that sort of ties back to what I was talking about regarding like toot my own horn. I've been working in HR tech for the last year and a half on top of running my business full time. It's been a wild ride. And I, for the longest time, was like, where's the boundary? Where's the line? Can I do this work within this company that I'm working for? Like, this is my passion. This is my heart. This is what I do. Can I bring it to work? And so I put my hand up and said, I'd love to facilitate a session internally for our company. I was really nervous about it. It freaked me out. They said yes. And I did it. And the response that I have gotten from my colleagues who have said, the fact that you are willing to talk about this with us, the fact that you are willing to cross what other people might have thought was a line professionally, the fact that you have brought such valuable information into our workplace where you like sit every day has helped. It's helped them have conversations with their managers. It's helped them put up boundaries. It's helped them recognize that, oh, I've been working somewhere for like a, you know, people say like, I've been working somewhere for a couple of years. And like Mother's Day is always hard, but I never thought to like take the Friday off or take the Monday off. And I'm like, take the Friday off, take the Monday off.
Yeah. Take both off.
Take it all. Take a week off. Yes. Dude, take off whatever you need.
Never come back. Scotland.
Never come back. Right. Okay. Go. I think though that like, that was so special to me to A, cross that line and like bring myself in this work, grief work into a tech space was really beautiful. But hearing from my colleagues who were like, I needed this, we needed this, this conversation changed something. Like that's been incredibly special to me because those are people that I talk to every day and I get to work with every day. And they're like, you've dropped some bombs and I'm really excited about it.
That is amazing. And I love that, you know, that started within your own workspace or adjacent to while doing it other places. I mean, that's beautiful. And I hope that encourages someone listening to, you know, take a step forward in their own work community, whether it's pertaining to grief or something else. Like if you feel that you can speak to something, it's like leap the net and the net will appear. I feel like it's like, listen to your intuition if you have an inkling, but we're never going to feel like I'm 5,000% ready and prepared to do this. But, you know, you go with that inkling and then it can lead to something beautiful like that. So that is wonderful. Okay. Since it is the Dying of Laughter podcast, is there a comedic moment that surrounds your grief experience or perhaps pertaining to your company? If not, that is also okay. And if not comedic, sometimes another way of looking at it is something like bizarre or random or just so weird you just had to laugh.
Yeah. I was just in general with like finding laughter in grief. I was at a memorial service a while ago and someone, we were spreading ashes and someone made a comment and they were like, oh, like it's really nice that your grandpa is looking up at us, watching us do this right now in reference to them like legit being in hell. And like, I'm not a religious person, but something about it, I was like, the fact that you just said this at a memorial is truly the funniest thing I've ever heard. Like the fact that you were able to bring like comedy, criticism, like a critical lens to a human being who is dead was amazing to me. And I think it was like one of those moments where I was like, oh, this is someone modeling that there is permission to yes, be sad. And also just like say effed up stuff sometimes because that's how you need to process. So yeah, I love that. I was like, this is the best memorial I've ever been to. This is amazing. Yeah.
Obsessed.
And I laughed hard.
Shout out to that person. Obsessed. I love a dark humor moment. It's my favorite thing. I talk about my dad in stand up and it's a whole time. And I also reference his health and then I'm like, lawyers, you know, and I blame it on his career and just stupid stuff. Like I love that so much. I appreciate you being here. Where can people connect with you online professionally with Caregiving 2021 and also with you personally on Instagram or your newsletter and so forth?
Yeah, my website is elisafornery.com. Instagram is @elisa.fornery. Facebook is Grief is Hard AF. And then my newsletter, signups, everything is on my website. So yeah, that's where people can find me.
Amazing. I'm thrilled that Caregiving 2021 exists. I have no doubt it will be a hit, huge, like festival, long, million month long thing in Los Angeles. So I would love to attend next year. No pressure. Hey, but I'm excited for your business continue to grow and thrive. It's just, it's so cool. Like, I feel like you've had insurmountable growth even in these last few years. It's just like 10, you're just 10Xing yourself. No big deal. I love it.
Thank you so much. Yeah. First invitation going out in the mail to you. I will see you there next year. But I really, I appreciate it. Thank you for the support and the amplification and just the energy behind this. I really, really appreciate it.
Of course. Well, thank you so, so much. Cannot wait to share this. Yodo, you only die once.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.